Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday and Sunday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today are Pat Worthington and Mary Haynes, representing the El Paso Historical Society. And it's a very interesting interview that we're going to have here because, of course, as you all are aware, UTEP is celebrating its 100th birthday. Well, the society is celebrating its 60th birthday. And so we're going to talk a little bit about historical events and other exciting events that are coming to El Paso soon. So first of all, we'd like to welcome Mary and Pat. Thank you all very much for being with us here today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Let's start with you, Mary. You are the president of the society currently. Tell us a little bit about how this organization came about. How long has it been around?
Well, as you said, we're celebrating our 60th anniversary, and it was organized in 1954, March 18th, and there were many people that you would recognize their names who were involved. The founder was Mrs. Willard
Schuessler.
Schuessler, yes. Mm-hmm. There were other people involved at the time. There was Frank Fuel, Jack Fowl, John Neff, Joseph Leach, Richard White, many people who, in a moment, all of those followed as president. What the purpose of this society and why they were organized shall be to study the history of the city and the county of El Paso and the surrounding territory. And that's basically what we do. We conduct research. We foster research. We help people find things. We have an extensive archival collection. And Mrs. Worthington takes care of that. We foster research in the history of this whole entire area. We acquire and preserve documents, papers, other objects of historical interest and value pertaining to the area. We also make materials available for the information of the community. We publish and encourage the publication of historical writing. Pat will tell you more about that in a moment. We develop public consciousness of our rich heritage here and our historical background. We also have a house not far from UTEP at 603 West Yandell Drive. We are open
Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Right. Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday from 9 to 4, except on Friday close a little bit early at 3 o'clock. But we are in the process of restoring the Richard F. Burgess House and making improvements there. We have we'd have many of our meetings in that place. Our 60th anniversary has a lot of activities that have already gone on and that are going on. I'll tell you about that, but let's hear from Pat for a moment.
Okay, thank you, Pat.
Okay, thank you. We have an extensive archive at Burgess House, and the main collection that it started with was that of the Pioneer Association of El Paso. And is archives. We have their record book. We have and various papers that went from the Pioneer Association. But that was prior to it was the 1880s, 90s, and into about 1920. The Pioneer record book has the written biographies of a number of El Paso's founding fathers. But not everybody. And they have there are a number, but not everybody signed it. And that's people who came to El Paso prior to 1920. And some people have great handwriting. This is all handwritten, not typed. And some people have writing that you're guessing at what you're reading, that it was even then. But that we have that. Then we have other kinds of archives that are of interest. And one of our most significant archives is a small collection, but it is the only collection that exists of the Taft-Diaz meeting that occurred here in 1909. I was aware, we went through this collection. It's the letters, the acceptance, the rejections, what happened, the programs, all this kind of information. And I contacted the Library of Congress because I thought they would have something. Taft does not have a presidential library. And the Library of Congress sent me three reels of microfilm, all of which deal with the toasts that were made at the meeting and a word here and a word there changed. It doesn't, there are no archives anywhere except here on that visit. And they have been copied and put on a disc, and so we do have a backup that's over in the UTEP Special Collections Department because we don't want things just to disappear and no record remaining. And that is probably our most significant collection. It does not get used too often, but it's nationally significant in terms. It was the first meeting between a president of the United States and a foreign president. And it occurred both when he left the country, they met in Juarez, and they met here. And it was the first visit of that kind for a United States president.
Is it true, Pat, that the president got stuck in the bathtub?
That's what I've heard. Taft was not a small person.
Yes.
And that's what I have heard. And he was in town less than 24 hours.
Oh, dear.
The train was I've forgotten what its name is. There is a picture. Was parked across the street by the St. Regis Hotel. That's where he stayed, and that's where they had part of their meeting. And it was a great event. There was a parade. There was meetings and great dinners and meetings in Juarez and meetings here. It was a wonderful event. And all of the records remain here. They did not expand across country.
That is very interesting. And as Mary mentioned, and you mentioned, President Taft was a very big man. In fact, one of the things that happened, from what I understand, and I'm a big history buff as well, that one of the chairs that he was sitting on during his visit here in El Paso broke.
I have heard that one,
and
too.
And he fell.
Wow. Yes. There is a picture of the two chairs that were sitting in the room, an official room. There's no other person in it. It's just the two chairs in the room. And they're in perfect condition, but I have heard that he broke his chair.
Now, as far as people wanting to see exhibits about El Paso or pictures, and I know on Facebook, because of social media, there is a Facebook page that you all have. There's one called Remember El Paso When, and there's a lot of pictures there. But is there a place at the Burgess House, or is there a different place where people can go and see artifacts and other historical documents or pictures of El Paso?
One of the things that happened when the Historical Society began, it was in what it was the old Cavalry Museum over on the east side of town. And when the Historical Society moved to Burgess House in the 80s, there was a split between the archives. And the three-dimensional archives are at the El Paso Public Library. And we got the paper archives and the flat archives. And I think we got the best part of the deal because they're the most interesting part for research. But that was the split then. So we have mostly paper archives, photographs, documents, materials of that nature, and then we have over the years there have been other things that have come in like artwork and stuff like that. But that split occurred a long time ago. Four archives. And then, of course, UTEP has a huge collection in here. And when you talk about El Paso history and photographs and items, depending on kind of what the subject matter is, there are three major entities, and that's the Border Heritage Collection at the Public Library, us, and UTEP Special Collections. And to make sure that, you know, what kind of documents are in each place and their use. And they are available for use for anybody coming in and using them.
We also have a website that people can go to and look at. It's www.elpasohistory.com. And or they can email us if they're looking for something specific. If they don't have time to come by that day, they can email us at info@elpasohistory.com. But we have 10,000 photographs there, which is incredible. And and we are very happy to share those and help people search for the kinds of things that they want to find.
As far as history goes, and as you all know, when you walked into this building, we just discovered something this week here in our building. But sometimes history gets uncovered, or sometimes people are having a garage sale, they're moving, and they come across something that they want to know, what is this all about, et cetera. So do you have researchers who are constantly doing more research on the history of El Paso and stuff like that?
Yes, we do have researchers, quite a few. It's getting to be where we have more from the internet than we from emails than we have people who just walk in. But we do have a lot of people. Now, right now, we have been helping the seventh graders with their History Day projects, and that competition is this coming Saturday, and we have been helping with things, because they have to concentrate on El Paso history. And so we have been helping them, and that some have come in, and then we have, you know, provided information here or there. We do have quite people do come in regularly, and it kind of peaks at the time during vacation. We get professional historians because they're not teaching. And then during the year, you can tell when final exams, term papers, and so forth are due. The researchers peak locally, unless something just happens to come up that they want information about. But otherwise, we get quite a few out of town and worldwide requests for information.
And speaking of worldwide, we have received attention worldwide over the years because of the. And I want to say alleged as a journalist, because the first Thanksgiving that took place here, and the King of Spain came down here one year. And then the actual, I guess, town, Paso del Norte, was founded, I think, in 1680 by Franciscan friars. When did it actually become a city? Do you know, or do you remember?
I haven't had a chance to read the paper, but there have been people here since Oñati came through. But the first railroad came in here in 1881, and the city really did not start to grow until the railroad came through. And then I discovered a little article yesterday that I haven't had a chance to read yet that talks about when the county seat moved from San Elizario to El Paso. And so the Lower Valley mission towns grew faster than El Paso itself. But then El Paso became the center of the county and became the county seat, and it just grew.
And a lot of people assume still that El Paso is the dusty old town, western town that Marty Robbins sings about in his song. And thanks to Marty Robbins, we got a lot of notoriety. But when they come here and they go, wow, you know, and they're looking for cowboys and Indians, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. That's true. However, my husband and I were talking about this just yesterday because we've noticed in the past several months, every street in town, traffic has suddenly increased, and so there's more and more activity, and I'm not sure where all the people are coming from, but we've got a lot more traffic than we had, say, 6 months ago, and so there is a great increase in that.
And I think a lot of people are finding that out too because of the recent incidents we've had on the freeway. And the traffic jams, and they're not used to that. People who live in Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, yes, but in El Paso, no. Yeah. And that's because of the population growth.
Right. And there's one other thing, and that's a national item. I mean, if you've noticed, this has not been a kind year for weather in the north. And it has happened every year for the past several years that Interstate 10 through town is the only road open from one west coast to east coast because of weather during the winter. And because the snow has come down, ice through Interstate 20, through Dallas, they've all through there. And Interstate 10 can be the only route open from one coast to the other.
And that's the way it was in the days of the Old West also, uh-huh. that route. It just escapes me now, but it'll come to me. Now, as far as you mentioned the Lower Valley, and part of the Lower Valley, of course, is the Tigua Reservation and the Tigua Indians, and they've been around for a long time as well. And they play a significant role also in our history.
Yes, they do. Most of their records are there. At the Teakwood Reservation, and because I'm not aware of any of us having records from the Teakwoods, we have maybe things that happened there and some information, but I think that the records are there at the reservation.
And a lot of people, as I mentioned, associate us with cowboys and westerns. In fact, someone once said, I can't remember who it was, that Wyatt Earp. Stayed here for a while, but it was just too violent, too wild for him, so he went to Arizona instead.
Well, it's one of the things for research here, and while there's a lot of interesting things that have happened in El Paso, and there's a lot of history, almost a good percentage of the requests for information are that period from about 1890 to 1910, the time of the prostitutes in South El Paso. That's when the Gentleman's Club got its Gordon Frost book, came from that. The cowboys, the saloons, all of this kind of stuff. There's a good collection area for that particular period of time. We get lots of questions about that. People all over talk about, want information about that particular area that was in South El Paso. Almost none of that particular district remains. And for example, South El Paso Street, there's a really good picture of looking down from what is now the Plaza Theater, looking down South El Paso Street, which is two blocks long at the time. And you can see the sign on the right-hand side of the street that says Pony. That was Ben Dowell's saloon, and the Pony Saloon. And he lived in back of that saloon. And of course, he was El Paso's first mayor. And we have a great tintype picture of him. It's a very unique tintype picture. We have a copy on display, but because you can't touch tintype pictures. But it's a large picture. And he was imprisoned during the Spanish-American War. And when his distinctive appearance, his beard and his hair turned white during that time, and so he has a very distinctive appearance. But his saloon was just about two blocks down from the Plaza Theater.
And Mary, before we started the interview, you mentioned something about the Polish American Society, and also your involvement with them, and also a big event that they have coming up.
Yes, and we're working with them to make sure that it's done well, and we've got a person, Lucy Scarborough, who's playing Chopin that evening. We're going to have Polish food. The exhibit is from Warsaw, and it was first in Polish, but this one is in English. And the first Polish people came to Texas in 1854 from Upper Silesia, and they had been farmers. They sold their farms, and then they bought farms. Once they got to Texas, they had to walk about 200 miles into the state, and the women at that time wore shockingly short skirts up to their ankles. The Texas women were dragging their dresses in the dirt, if you recall some of the movies. But they settled Ponte Maria, and it's the oldest Polish settlement in the U.S. So we are going to honor those people, and also the other Polish people who have helped in our revolution, have helped establish Texas. My father's ancestor was on that ship that disembarked. They disembarked at the port of Indianola that has been blown away by hurricanes since then. but they've had an impact on Texas. There are more than 200,000 Polish people living in the state now.
And the Warsaw exhibit, where is that going to be at?
It's going to be at the El Paso Museum of History, and opening night will be June 28th, and after that it will be at the History Museum July, August, and September. So we're really looking forward to that. We like helping get these things done.
Pat, as Mary mentioned, Polish Americans played a vital role in our history. And a lot of times people are surprised when they hear of immigration and immigrants in the El Paso area, thinking that the majority of the immigrants are Mexican. However, our history shows that there were a lot of other people playing a role in the part of El Paso, including, of course, the Chinese. Concordia Cemetery is a testament to that because it's one of the first, I guess, or perhaps the only segregated cemetery in the U.S. that was designed that way.
Yes. And we have a lot of German influence, too, not only in Central Texas, but from when the German Air Force was here. And I know that they just left Fort Bliss and went back. But they have had a large influence here and a lot of intermarriage with local people, and that being here. The way Texas goes across, you know, I mean, it's 1,000 miles across the state, and various international groups did settle in various locations, and El Paso has been such a crossroads, east, west, north, and south, because you had people coming up. For example, the Mormons came up from Mexico to El Paso, and then they took circuitous routes to find places where they could settle safely.
And Jews as well, as we were discussing before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But safely, because it wasn't always as welcoming as it is today.
What are some of the other topics that you have a lot of information on, like the Mexican Revolution?
Yes.
And other things that the Plaza Theater, I know, is one.
Right.
What else, Pat?
Well, we have a really large Mexican Revolution collection, a lot of postcards. That was the beginning mainly of postcards, and a lot of the pictures are on postcards. And there was a big industry here at the time making postcards of Mexican Revolution, and wish they were still existing. We have the Opal Lance collection, which is a large number of maps of the Franklin Mountains and other studies of he was an engineer and other studies, and it's really a rather huge collection. And then we have a lot of social clubs. We have the women's clubs, garden clubs, a whole shelves of the gardens club, yearbooks and scrapbooks that they have had over the years. Let me see. I'm trying. What else were you mentioning?
Yearbooks, right?
We probably have the largest yearbook collection in El Paso. And almost all of them were found at estate sales in town. And but we have a very large yearbook collection, and it's a hard collection to come by. Except people do just sell off after a certain period of time. They sell off their yearbooks, and we have acquired about three different bookcases full of yearbooks, and from various schools. And oddly enough, they go down to elementary schools from elementary up through high schools, and we have some from UTEP also.
And it's interesting when you talk about yearbooks, sometimes when you page through them and you find these famous people and going, wow,
yeah.
Here they are when they went to this school, et cetera.
And that's true. And actually when people are come into the historical society, oftentimes they just wind up sitting there looking at yearbooks. They don't have any other questions whatsoever. They're just looking through yearbooks because they are enjoyable to look at.
You mentioned that the period that most people are interested in are the period leading up to the Mexican Revolution. But during the 1920s, El Paso was also very popular because of Prohibition. and people would go into Mexico.
That's right.
And also, I remember talking to Coach Richardson, Nolan Richardson, the fact that he could go to Juarez and he was a free man. He was a free man here, but there was a lot of racism and segregation. Mm-hmm. And when he went to Mexico and the jazz clubs, and what I understand is that a lot of opera houses and theaters also started here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about your meetings that you talked about? Are they bi-monthly or weekly?
Quarterly.
Quarterly, okay.
That's one thing that the people can come to when they're a member. We have our board meetings once a month on Tuesdays, the first Tuesday of the month. And we begin at 11:30 a.m. And people can certainly come and join us for lunch. We bring it in for $5, which is a pretty good bargain. And we don't meet in July or August, but we are continually meeting for the rest of the year.
And the quarterly newsletter that you all have, it's called The Passport, I believe?
No, that's the quarterly journal.
Journal?
The newsletter is called El Conquistador.
Okay. Oh, El Conquistador. Okay. Uh-huh. And people get that by joining?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they get the password, which is it's a really interesting historical document. It's usually about, 50, 60 pages?
It's 58, and unfortunately, we're going to have to reduce a few pages due to new postal regulations.
Now, again, what is the phone number that people can call for more information? I think we gave the email and the web page, but we didn't give a number.
It's 915-533-3603.
That number again is 533-3603, 533-3603. And the webpage is elpasohistory.com. And if you have questions, it's info@elpasohistory.com. And again, Mary, when is the Warsaw exhibit going to be displayed? That's in June, you mentioned?
It will be, the opening night will be June 28th.
28th, okay.
And then it will be open through 3 months, so July, August, and September.
Well, thank you, ladies, very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Pat Worthington and Mary Haynes with the El Paso Historical Society. Again, if you have questions about the society, 533-3603. 533-3603. And remember, they are only open on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. And Fridays, they have short hours. But you can also leave a message or contact them at elpasohistory.org. Thank you all for being with us.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.